Welcome once again to Word on the Hills with me, Felicity Sidnell-Reed, my co-host today, Chris Cameron, and our guest this week, poet Susan Gillis. Each week, we visit with authors, editors, or publishers who have regional or local connections. We hope to find out a little about their lives and what prompts them to write. We give them an opportunity to read some of their work for us. Today, we're very pleased to have Susan Gillis with us to help us celebrate Poetry Month. Welcome, Susan.
Thank you.
Susan was to be a guest poet of Coburg Poetry Workshop's third Thursday reading series for March 2020. We hope that her reading will take place later in the year. But in the meantime, please enjoy our conversation with Susan, which we recorded recently by using Zoom. Her books include 2018's Yellow Crane, part love poem to her former home and part meditation on the ecologies of place, writing and desire, a member of the collaborative group Yoko's Dogs, and the performance group Moneco. Susan also co-curates the online journal Halibut for micropoetry and offers workshops, manuscripts, and mentorships online and in person. In fact, you're very busy. There seem to be two strong foundations to your writing practice, Susan, one of which is inspired by collaboration with others and another which needs peace, quiet, and a writer's solitude, which you now find in rural Ontario. Tell us first about your collective, Yoko's Dogs. Where did the name come from?
We were practicing together for a couple of years and were realizing that this was something we enjoyed doing. So batting around a few phrases that came to mind, things we saw when we were on our walks, images, words and phrases, none of them stuck. And it was when we were reading a sequence we'd written together out loud that we all just kind of paused. The verse was, "Yoko's house is dark, her dogs tied in front, too cold to bark." And we all just went, "Hey, maybe we're those dogs." Our first thought was that people would link us with Yoko Ono, which was not our intention at all. But after we thought about that, we realized, well, maybe that's not even such a bad thing.
It does make one curious, I agree, because I think that is the association that many people would draw from it. But what are the satisfactions of writing with other people? And tell us what it means to write poetry as a collective.
Yeah, that's a great question, Felicity. Part of the satisfaction is certainly found in the challenge for me, particularly of letting go of control over outcomes. So when we write collectively, we're having to accommodate each other's ways of seeing and ways of speaking. And instead of just going with what I myself might want to do with an idea, I'm instead invited to expand that range a lot.
Do you think the collaborative writing takes a particular form as a result of the collaboration?
I think what you're asking relates a little bit to our process, which begins in the traditional Japanese form of renga, or sometimes known as renku, or linked verse. This was a practice that precedes haiku poetry as we know it now, actually, and was very typical, in which four, five, or more poets would share the writing of verses according to certain patterns of linking to elements in each other's verses and keeping the poem moving forward that way. So we practice that way and then gather what we produce and look at it for things that emerge as poems.
Well, that sounds as though it would be interesting to read. There's a great variety, really. So other things you do are collaborative, aren't they? I imagine that the kind of editing you do requires collaboration with your client, and mentoring too suggests working with someone. Tell us about your approach to editing poetry. How do you go about that?
And it's funny, isn't it, that as an introvert, I do find working with people really enjoyable and an important aspect of my own practice. I guess what I find most engaging about that is this meeting of minds and the way it requires me to stretch and it takes me outside of my own ways of looking at things again. So when I'm working with a writer on a poem or group of poems, what I might do is look at what the poems want me to understand about them. I will form some questions to put to that poet, along with my notes and observations about how the poem is speaking to me, what I see in its detail, where the knots are, things that I became used to discovering as a teacher in the classroom when you could observe blocks to learning in students and you wanted to help untangle those knots a little bit and open the way. So that's what I bring to working with people on their poems.
I think that's why we really, really enjoy having someone to share poems with and to, I do that with a friend and we exchange poems and it's very helpful to have someone look at it and give little questions and so on to consider at least. Right. Can poetry writing be taught?
Oh gosh, if only
If somebody comes in without having any idea, can you teach them to write poetry? I'd like to know.
I love that question because, it's so often thought of as can poetry be learned? And the obvious easy answer to that is, of course, yes. But can poetry be taught is a slightly different thing. Mm-hmm. And I think teaching is only one part of a dynamic process. Teaching is what has happened when somebody has learned something. And when I think about the great teachers I've had and how they've taught me, I realize that what they've done is open the way for me. They've put me a way through something, a way to understand or meet something that I don't know anything about or that I know very little about or have very little experience of. And then there are the practical things, like you can teach a host of useful questions a writer can ask of her own work. You can offer insight into a writer's practice, the kinds of exercises they're doing, the things they make as they're learning about their own process. So I think offering insight into those kinds of things can end up teaching someone. So in that sense, yes, I think poetry writing can be taught. It takes a willing student, but really, teaching, we don't really know what we're teaching at all, do we? We don't know what students are learning.
Not until sometime afterwards, perhaps, when,
yes.
When you and suddenly realize that you have had an effect on people. But of course, they have to have wanted to learn. What about it, Susan? Why is poetry important? It's Poetry Month after all, and why should we study it? How do you deal with skepticism about poetry?
Oh, I have a lot of tolerance for skepticism. I'm skeptical about so many things myself. But poetry is where we can say the things that are unsayable in our lives.
I like that.
And connects us. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's a great way.
I have lots more to say about this, but I know we're short on time.
Please read to us from your work.
Reading a section from the long poem At the Heart of Yellow Crane, called Obelisk. This is the last closing section. When the bear came, I was searching for blackberries near the quarry. I had already walked through a wet hollow where wild mint grew and gathered some. I was carrying the mint in my pocket, pinching it and sniffing its oil on my fingers when the movement came, a dark fleck drifting down the side of my vision. The bear did not notice me till I stepped back, brambles grazing my arms and face. A shadow moved in and settled, enclosing us, a shadow with an odor like mineral ash. I don't know why, but I held out the bunch of mint, held it straight out from my chest at arm's length, held it still, nothing but brambles supporting me. The bear studied me, then grunted and turned over a rock, swatted the ground sheet opened, and moved off into the woods which folded around her.
Oh, I like that.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. And now we'll take a short break.